Welcome to the Mended Futures podcast. Today, we had the distinct honor of having Brian Moss on. He serves as the Therapeutic Services Coordinator at Hat Creek Camp, which is 518's camp ministry. He is known as a father to the community at large. He's a biological father, adoptive father, foster father, pastor of a church, just an all-around superstar, fantastic person. So
we can't wait for you to hear. And as you're listening to this episode, think about how you can play a part in the community and where you are in the river.
We hope you enjoy.
Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
Cheers to our guests.
Cheers to Brian Moss. He's our guest today. I like to refer to Brian. Hang on, let me say that into the microphone. That might help. I like to refer to Brian as our very own Troy Bolton at 518. So welcome. Everyone's already going to be a huge fan of you.
Bet on.
Yes. If y'all haven't seen that video, go on Hat Creek Camp socials and find it, because it is epic.
Or not. Don't find it.
He's already viral.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell us who you are.
Yeah.
Who am I? Moss. Everybody calls me Moss. So, who am I? I'm so many things. I wear so many hats. So I pastor a church, New Praise. We just celebrated 13 years. Super excited.
Love
the ministry. Yeah. I'm a husband. We've been married 23 years. It's crazy. Wow. I don't know how she put up with me that long. But husband, dad. My oldest grade day will be 29 in a week or two. Yeah. So dad to many. I have so many kids.
Do you?
Yes, I have 4 biological kids. Mm-hmm. We have so far 3 adopted.
Wow.
And then I don't even know how many we have that we're fostering right now. It's so many.
Currently fostering. You can't keep track.
Yeah, I can't keep track. Seriously. I don't even know how many we have.
That's amazing.
And then I'm dad to just so many kids. So many kids. And if I'm not dad, I'm unk. You know, so you say my name anywhere in Lynchburg, everybody knows who Moss is.
Hello.
So, yeah. So foster parent. I'm missing something. Therapeutic services coordinator for Hat Creek Camp, which I'm adoring.
Good.
Loving it.
So yeah. What does that role look like?
What does that role look like? So I oversee our adventure-based counseling ministry with Hat Creek Camp.
Time out.
Yeah.
What is adventure-based?
Ooh.
That's like ropes course-y
Yeah. So adventure-based.
It sounds risky.
A little bit. Yeah. And it is for some. We are basically therapeutic mentors, but we add the adventure element to it because we have so many guys and girls who just sit. So we make them get up and we make them get out and we make them touch grass and we make them experience things, which adds to their story. And we're proud of what we do.
The nerdy part of me, because I've spent my entire career devoting my energies towards the adolescent species. Mm-hmm. And now they live in my house, too, which is so interesting. I'm living it and I'm working in it. Teenagers chase dopamine.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you can do through adventure-based mentoring versus traditional sit across a table.
Yep.
And there's nothing bad about that.
Not at all.
You can model for young people that there are natural ways to chase highs.
Yes.
In life. And I think that especially kids now who are growing up with screens and video games, and I'm not saying kids these days.
Right.
It's the world
right.
We live in.
Yes.
But modeling that there are so many ways.
Yes.
To find that dopamine high.
Yes. One of the things that you'll hear about Lynchburg is there's nothing to do here.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out.
There's a lot of stuff to do here
if you get out. and find it and kind of immerse yourself in discovering who you are. That's why when you say, who are you? I'm like, truthfully, I'm still discovering who I am. And I'm loving that. I'm learning from the kids I work with as much as I'm pouring into and teaching them. So it's a cool thing. When you talked about the risky element of the adventure-based counseling, it is. It's risky for some because when we talk about high ropes, one of the first things you hear is, I'm afraid of heights. And it's like, why? Come on up here.
You said that so zen.
Yeah.
Like yeah. You have your eyes closed, you have a peace sign on a surfboard.
Seriously. And that's what I do. A lot of kids, we've had kids do the high ropes and get to the zip line. We've had kids, I think our record right now being stuck is an hour and 15 minutes of refusing to go down the zip line. And then they do it. And they have the biggest grin on their face.
Yeah. But.
Yes.
If you think about the difference between teenagers and adults, mm-hmm. your record for a teenager being mm-hmm. stuck is an hour and 15 minutes.
Yes. Yeah.
I can think of dozens of adults who've probably been stuck for.
Ever.
Decades.
They yeah. decided not to try.
Who just never came up.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I always think that no matter what generation the teenagers are,
yep.
when I started teaching, they were millennials.
Right.
Now we're Gen Z. My children are alpha. No matter what generation the teenagers are, we can learn so much from them.
Definitely. Yes.
What does that hour and 15 minutes entail? What's going on in that time?
A lot of crying.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of... refusal. No, I can't do it. A lot of imaginations getting the best of them.
Intrusive thoughts.
What could happen? What might happen? What will happen in their minds? What will I could die? And it's amazing how often kids these days think of death. It's amazing. Teaching Bible study during camp this year, one of the main things that came up was, I don't want to die. And it's like, why do you think you're going to die? And I'm talking like elementary kids. But being up there, they think they're going to die, don't want to die, but they don't want to live either.
Oh, my gosh, I just got chills.
Yeah, they don't want to live. A lot of us refuse to come up the ladder to try high ropes because we're refusing to live.
Paralyzed by fear.
So I want our listeners to reflect on that. Definitely. Where in your life are you refusing to climb the ladder?
Yeah.
Where in your life are you stuck? Are you so afraid of dying that you're not living? That is profound. Okay, yes. I think we're done here for today.
Thank you, Brian. Right? Appreciate you.
I did drop the nugget there.
And I wanted to go a little bit farther on the ropes. Mm-hmm. You're physically serving as a safety net.
Yeah.
As well as psychologically serving as a safety net. So think about your role as dad, pastor, therapeutic services coordinator. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you are the safety net?
100%. One of the lines I use is, if you fall, I'll catch you when we're up there on the high ropes. But they're secure. But yeah, I'm there. I motivate. I talk kids through. I love seeing kids overcome. I love seeing a terrified face transform into glee where they are just like, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, it wasn't that bad. And that's big because mm-hmm. living isn't that bad. Yeah, it's not that bad.
Hmm.
Failure is not that bad. Right?
Amen. Let's say that again. Yeah. I love failing forward.
Yeah.
And okay, what happens if you fail?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you fail? You get back up. My grandma used to say, you get back up and you try it again. That's the way I learned how to ride a bike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I fell, scraped my knee. All right, get back up, try it again.
Right.
Yeah.
So the title of this podcast is Mended Futures. Mm-hmm. Are you the product of a mended future?
That's a great question, and you have to unpack that for me. Because what do you mean?
Are there things in your past mm-hmm. or your family's past that you are the healed product of?
Ooh.
And how are you mending futures? So that's two different questions, but mm-hmm. we're really trying to ask guests about, are you the product of a mended future? Are you a mended future? And how in your life and your work are you mending futures?
Oh, wow.
If it helps, when I think of the question, are you a product of a mended future? I think about the Two Rivers visual. Mm-hmm. And if someone in your family who is a generation or two generations or so before you, did they come from a different part of the river than you from?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, coming from poverty, growing up in Greenfield, what is now James Crossing.
Tell the people who may not live in the area.
Okay.
What is James Crossing? What kind of housing complex?
How
would you describe it?
The hood. Okay. There's pride when I think about where I grew up. Because it was challenging. It was what it sounded like. Drugs, single parent homes, Section 8 housing, poverty, fighting, gunshots. It was all of the above. Thank God for a praying mom who was saved and had us in church every time the church doors were open. Mm. But we were definitely in that place. Like we were in the projects, you know what I'm saying? So my dad wasn't around. And he lived in Lynchburg. It's interesting, but I could count on one hand how many conversations or interactions, let's say interactions, that I had with my biological dad growing up. Thank God for some of the men in my church, Sterling Wilder being one of them.
Cool.
Like one of the most impactful influences in my life. My Uncle Rod, who was one of the deacons of the church, he kind of took me and one of my brothers under his wing. I spent summers at him and my Aunt Jean's house. Very fond memories. But the struggles that came with growing up in the projects is what made me who I am. And I feel like without that, I wouldn't be relevant to what I do. Didn't feel like it in the moment. You know, in the lion's den, it's uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. But it made me who I am, and I thank God for it, like, every day. Because without that experience, I don't even know how I could relate to my foster kids. Mm. Because when they come in with their stories, you know, I can sit down and really be with them. And not even compare our experiences, but when listening to them talk about their experiences, when I start talking about mine, seeing their eyes light up because you never would have known, you know. But yeah, definitely a product of a mended future. From great day, from Greenfield, from broken marriages. My mom was married. She married a minister and it didn't work. Mm. That's crazy. That's a lot to talk about too. Cause it wasn't like it wasn't a horror story where, I could talk about this man and he was just a horror. He was a fake Christian. It's nothing like that at all. There were just a lot of variables that played into it. But when you think about a Christian household, sometimes you think, you think it's supposed to work. It's gonna work. And sometimes it doesn't. And it didn't. So, you know, having the idea that now I have a dad, right? Even though he's a stepdad, you're thinking, hey, we have the American dream. Mm-hmm. Mom, dad, house, kids.
The unit is complete.
It's complete. And then it broke after a few years. There was some disappointment there. But again, without that experience, how could I relate, you know, to others? And it all plays a part into what I do now. Without those experiences, how could I sit with some people, you know? But through all of that, getting my degree, I was a parent as a teenager. Great day. Yeah. So I was a parent as a teenager. So I had a family as a teenager. But because of growing up without a dad, I refused to allow my kids to grow up without a dad. Mm. So I'm still with their mom. She's amazing. And we've been married 23 years. Great day. Brought my kids up in a two-parent household, bought a home, undergrad in psych, master's in pastoral counseling. And hey, now I'm where I am now. So
your kids are the product of the futures that you mended.
Are a product.
That's yes. Incredible.
Yeah.
So you've talked quite a bit about fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
You were a teenage dad.
Mm-hmm.
You've got biological children.
Yes.
You have adopted children.
Mm-hmm.
And you have foster children.
Yes.
Tell us about that dynamic. Ooh. What led you to fostering? What led you to adopting? Anything about being a teenage parent that you would like to share?
Even coming from a hard place, there's still this huge soft side of me that loves nurturing people.
Mm.
Like, I love nurturing people. Even when I've had to, like, it's crazy because I grew up in the hood. So it's times you had to fight. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So even after the fight, I always wanted to make sure the other person was okay. And
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Like, there were times even after, like, some of the worst fisticuffs,
mm-hmm.
I would go home and be really hurt that I had to do whatever I had to do. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because I may have hurt someone else. So there's a huge nurturing side to me.
Let's stop there for a minute. And I hate to interrupt you, but as you're working with kids who come from backgrounds like what you're describing, mm-hmm. you're probably more able to understand when you say, I had to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some of our children are growing up in trauma-filled situations where they have to do what on the outside seems bad,
right.
Really bad.
Right.
It's literally fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to survive, you have to fight.
And to take it even deeper, it's also normal. Like what
it's
we
normalized
call
and it's manhood.
Trauma, right. What we call trauma, some people call life.
Right.
It's what we do. It's
there's
how
nothing
I live
to process through because it's just life.
Right. And sometimes we don't even realize it's trauma until we're like way on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are traumas that I endured growing up that I never would have said was trauma. It's just what we mm-hmm. do. I get off the bus. If we got to fight, we got to fight. You know what I'm saying? If I get home, you know, hopefully there's food there. You know, things that it's just the norm. It's what we do. We're surviving. And it wasn't until like adulthood where I realized, dude, I was not supposed to go through that. This isn't normal. But what isn't normal to some is just life.
It shouldn't be normal, but it is.
Right, for others.
When you found out you were going to be a teenage dad,
mm-hmm.
how did people react? What would you say to people out there right now who mm-hmm. might be working with teenage fathers?
Right.
If they are going to be fathers, I think embracing parenthood is something that's really important. What was that like for you?
All right. So like, again, for me, it came natural. So where there was disappointment because it was so early. Mm-hmm. You do want to wait. I would encourage mm-hmm. wait, you know. Like, wait, there's so much that I know now that I didn't know then. But I embraced it. I was excited. It gave me the opportunity, I felt like, maybe to undo some things that I felt were done to me by not having a dad. Mm. There was an anger and resentment toward my dad for not being a dad. Like, how could you just not, right?
Especially for something that came so naturally to you.
Right, exactly. So, so there was excitement for me. There was the challenge for me. But I was ready to step up to the challenge. But that's not for everyone, because I did grow up in a nurturing environment. My grandmother was very nurturing in her own way. My mom was a mom, right? But we have a lot of kids who are not growing up with that, right? So the parenting element is foreign. Hmm. We have a lot of kids who are raising themselves or are being raised by older siblings to the best of their ability because they haven't had parents. So there's definitely a deficit there. So for someone nowadays, oh man, it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's tough watching kids parent who weren't parented. It's a struggle.
And I think about Vision 30, you know, if we're thinking about the river and going upstream, prevention is my whole heart.
Right.
I love talking to teenagers, talking to young people about what it's going to be like when they're parents.
Yeah.
They are our next generation of parents.
Yes.
Some of the teenagers right now will be parents by the time Vision 30 is a reality,
right,
by 2030.
Right.
And it's exciting. And it's really important to talk about healthy relationships.
Yes.
Parenting.
Yeah.
It's really important to talk about children's safety. I love that you said safety is my number one. You know, the main thing that you have to do is keep kids safe.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids grow up in a neglectful situation.
Right.
And people didn't even know. I mean, neglect was the norm in some situations.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to, you know, dial in on the teenagers because they're going to be the next employees.
Yes.
They're going to be the next parents.
Yes.
They're going to be taking care of us. You have to believe in the teenagers.
Yes. Yeah. And help restore hope to the teenagers. Mm-hmm. I think that's the element. How do we restore hope? That's a undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
It really is an undertaking. How do we restore hope? How do we reinstitute connection? Because it's foreign to a lot of people now.
We're gonna have to mend that.
We're gonna have.
That's the part of mended futures. We're gonna have to mend that. We're gonna have to really model meaningful relationships and connections again.
Getting people.
And I have to do that with my kids, especially my foster kids, because and when I'm mentoring, modeling that, because a lot of most kids that I work with do not know how to engage.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to say hello.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have the money to pay for something and they'll go, will you pay for this for me?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to engage with the cashier. They don't want to exchange. It's so interesting.
My 14-year-old son is like that. And my daughter compensates for him. She's 11 and it is the funniest thing. So he will pay for something for her. That's his love language. If she will go and do the transaction, and it is... it's hysterical, but it's also kind of sad that we have to explicitly teach,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know if you've seen the Instagram reels of the mom who makes the child call on the telephone and set up appointments.
I have.
Oh, wow.
And they ask if he's diabetic and he looks at her and he says, am I diabetic? So we have to intentionally, explicitly teach.
Yes.
And I've realized adults are so social. When you think about, you know, if you're at a social gathering, lots of times, will you walk with me to the line to get the food? Or women, go to the bathroom together, which right. I think is really interesting.
Or making sure you know someone before the event so you can sit next to each other.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think even in professional settings, I've said this to people over the last few years, you really should meet Taylor. She's a nice person. Would you like me to introduce you? Or I think you really need to go to Hat Creek Camp. Brian's right. really neat. Would you like me to go with you? Right. I've started to say those things. The most confident, competent people say yes. Would you go with me?
Right.
So something that we can do to help people of all ages.
Yeah.
Would you like me to go with you? Would you mm-hmm. like my help the first time? And I know that sounds crazy.
No, it doesn't. Because even if I agreed to go to Hat Creek, I don't know what to expect.
Right.
Right. Right. And so if I have someone with me, it makes me a little bit more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like an extension of the kids who didn't want to go down the zip line.
Right. Yeah.
It's I don't yeah. know what to expect, so I can't do that.
Right. Yeah. So I'd rather just not go.
Yeah.
But there are people like you who say, even if you fall, I'll catch you.
Yeah.
I'll go with you.
Yeah.
There you go.
We'll not know what to do together.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that.
Life is messy, and sometimes people just need someone safe to talk to. We're here to listen because everyone's story should be heard. 518 Counseling exists to empower children, adults, and families to overcome past experiences and create a path to being stronger both mentally and spiritually. Family is a nuanced concept. 518's family care team brings simple solutions to complex situations through professional intervention, interpersonal support, and parenting education. We strive for an outcome of mending families and keeping children safe. 518's Connect team equips and empowers volunteers with the training and support to serve confidently by matching their passions with opportunities. Our outreach is targeted to build partnerships with individuals, churches, agencies, and businesses. At Hat Creek Camp, we provide exceptional camp experiences with careful attention to the needs of youth, encouraging campers to grow through trust-based challenges and successes. It's a place to build relationships, inspire change, and transform lives.
So you've talked a little bit about being a foster parent.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things you didn't expect out of the fostering experience?
Oh my gosh. All right. So I love talking about my kids.
Please.
Okay. Like, I love talking about my kids. All right. So first of all, I call them gremlins because Perfect. If you've ever seen the movie.
Affectionately.
Gremlins, affectionately.
Yes. Of course.
Most times. I call them gremlins. If you've ever seen the movie Gremlins, and if you're familiar with it, you know, you got Gizmo, who is a Mogwai. Mm-hmm. He's the cute little furry.
This is such an 80s thing to be talking
such
about.
An 80s so, thing. And I'm in my zone.
Most
right
of the audience will not even know what you're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, go check out Gremlins. Okay, part one and two. It's important.
Okay. Very important.
All right, very important. You have Gizmo, who's a Mogwai.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's so cute.
He's so cute, right? Babies, right? So cute.
Baby yoga.
They're so cute. But Gizmo had rules, right? You couldn't get him wet.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't feed him after midnight. No bright light. All right. So three rules.
Mm-hmm.
Three rules. Don't break those rules. All right. Kids, they don't come with instructions, but there are rules. You don't want to break the rules when it comes to kids. If you break the rules, the cute little Mogwai turns into these green creatures that come out of cocoons, and they are terrorizers. And my kids.
I can relate.
They're terror. So you got to follow the rules. And what I tell people is, unfortunately, in order to come into foster care, parents didn't follow the rules.
Mm.
Right? And it's not always as so much that the kids have become the gremlins, the monsters, but sometimes it's to keep them from becoming the monsters, that they are removed from the homes. Unfortunately, to be fair, most of the time, by the time kids are removed from the homes, the damage is done. And so the expectation when I started doing foster care was that if I shower them with love and the love of Christ and expose them to church and, you know, Christ, it's going to fix them. Mm.
Fix.
It's gonna fix them. Yeah.
The project.
And it didn't always work. And that was the most humbling thing about foster care for me. I love these kids so much, and I'm not giving them everything they want. I'm teaching them responsibility and accountability, and I'm teaching them about Christ, and I'm loving them, and I'm nurturing them, and they're still terrorizing things, and they're still so chaotic.
You're trying to follow the rules.
Yeah, sometimes I don't even think they tried. I'm like, what in the world is going on? And if you've ever seen Gremlins, as bad as you think the Gremlins are, if you ever pay attention to the movie, you will also see how curious they are about the world that they're in,
mm-hmm.
right? They're tearing up everything, but they're doing it in a way where they're trying to figure out what's going on around. They're just breaking everything. Mm-hmm. And they're biting people. And
I call it age-appropriate but socially inappropriate behavior.
Really?
Yes. When you think about development,
yeah.
You're supposed to break things. You're
right.
Supposed to fail. You're supposed to. So some of that is natural development. And then you add a layer of trauma onto it.
Yes.
And it's chaotic.
Mm.
So I have to ask you. We've mentioned the Two Rivers video. When you think about the healthy river, when you think about the unhealthy river, I always like to talk about upstream. In a lot of ways, foster care is standing in the middle of the river.
Right.
So it's an intervention. Sometimes it's prevention for the next generation, or we always hope it's prevention. Have you sowed some seeds?
Mm-hmm.
Have you done all the things where you think you're going to fix or you're trying to fix? And at the time, it seemed like failure. Are you far enough in this journey to realize what I thought was a failure? They were getting it. Like, have you seen the harvest in some situations where you didn't think, you know, our job is to sow the seed.
Right.
But we may never see the harvest.
We may never
see prevention.
Because one sows, one waters, another receives the increase, right?
Mm-hmm.
So pastor in a church, 13 years, I'm preaching one Sunday, and in walks this white guy who's kind of familiar. And I'm like, who's this? But it's after the middle of service because I'm like in the sermon. And I'm preaching the sermon, but my attention keeps coming back to him because he gets super engaged, like super engaged with the sermon. He's standing up, he's cheering, he's amening. And my wife has turned three shades of red. And our secretary, Jessica, has tears in her eyes. And I'm like, what's going on? So I finish the sermon. I close service, and then I look at him again and I'm like, oh my God, this is one of my kids who left when he was 14 and now he's 20.
Wow.
Who showed up at
6 years.
6 years. Showed up at service and he's still him. He's just an adult. And he talked about some things that he had been through. But he really doted on what he had received while he was with us and how it brought him back. He's now back in the city. He showed up Sunday, as a matter of fact.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And 14-year-olds typically don't articulate.
Right. And he's on the spectrum.
So a 20-year-old
mm-hmm.
can articulate some things.
Can articulate, yep. And I have, he's now 18, he's in independent living, but he's one that we had begun the adoption process. He would have been number two, but his behaviors became so gremlin-ish that I had to, and this was like one of the first times that I said, okay, this isn't gonna work.
Hmm.
Because it, I always felt like if I said those words, that I was rejecting the kid. Mm-hmm. And I can never reject a kid because Jesus would never reject a kid.
It's not going to work like this.
Not going to work like this. Right. And so I had to say that he had to go. And
wow. I can't imagine that was an easy decision to come to.
Oh, my God.
Because they're so used to rejection.
So used to rejection.
Can we, like, really dive into that? Like,
yeah.
Can we talk about, like, what you're comfortable sharing about how you got there? Like, what emotions you felt?
Oh,
like,
gosh.
How you
because you're feeling them right now.
Because you're mending futures.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that is so heavy when you realize.
That's like a moment that makes you question everything, probably.
Yeah, it did. Because this is one of the only kids who, so with my kids, and it may come natural to you guys, but with my kids, we say, I love you every night before we go to sleep. We hug. I have to, like, put them out of my bed, seriously, every night. And so this is one of the kids, this is one of the only kids who, when I said, I love y'all, good night, he said, can you not say that?
Wow.
I'm getting emotional. He said, can you not say that? Because there's so many people who have said that and then they disappear.
Yeah. Oh.
And so when I had to say, I can't do this, my mind went to that night immediately. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm becoming the guy who said, I would never do that. And here I am doing it. So it was a lot, but I knew that I had reached, like, it was too much for me. Yeah,
it wasn't healthy for anybody.
And it wasn't healthy for anyone. Got and as it. A man, right, nothing is ever too much for us, right? And so when I had reached my threshold, I was like, oh, my God. And I got my Superman shirt on today.
You sure
because
did.
He's my guy. And I realized, dude, this is your kryptonite.
Well, kid who won't accept love.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got all the love to give in the world, but what happens when they simply won't accept it?
Won't accept it and are rejecting it, actively rejecting it. Mm. And so he had to leave. We maintained contact. You found out later that some promises had been made to him by a biological family member that required him messing up the placement. So
he sabotaged.
He sabotaged the placement on purpose.
Got it.
Expecting to go
there.
There, and it never happened.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hearing you talk about that, it wasn't easy for you to say it. It also wasn't easy to hear it. I've worked with teenagers before that have said something akin to, the only people who have ever loved me were paid to love me.
Yeah. And I teach that when I'm teaching therapeutic options, which is some of the trauma-based things that we use at Hat Creek. Yeah. When we look at the circles of support for a lot of people, when we talk about our circles of support, we're going to say mom, we're going to say dad, we're going to call out some family members, we're going to call out some coworkers, we're going to call out some teachers who were very important to us, some mentors in our lives who were very important to us. But when we talk to people who are in our care because they have been referred to us,
or it's required,
anyone that they, 95% of who they name are going to be people who are paid to be there.
Mm-hmm. And those people, when I heard the first child say that, I thought, you have no idea. You have no idea. The paid helpers go home in their families and worry about you.
Yeah.
And and we're not paid to do that. But it's true. It's 100%. True that, and I think that's why it's so important for listeners, so important for the village, for neighbors to realize, loving on someone in your village
yeah.
that you're not paid to love is right. so important.
Yes.
Unpaid coaches, unpaid deacons, unpaid, right. you know, the power of not having to.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
I have a question.
Okay. I might have an answer.
I am thinking about the people who are listening, who mm-hmm. are hearing your story and feel completely touched, completely inspired.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still saying, I could never do something like that. I'm not Brian Moss. I'm not dad. I'm not unk. That's
or
not
I'm
me.
Not willing to stand in the river.
Sure.
Right.
If we use the river.
Sure. Right. So I'm wondering, other than like the obvious, because it's the right thing to do, because mm-hmm. kids need parents, because kids need to be safe, who in their right mind would step into this place?
A fostering?
Yeah.
Oh. Goodness.
Of fostering, of therapeutic mentoring, of who would step into the mess? Who would step into the river where the waterfall is?
Oh. It's definitely a call, mm. right? So I guess to counter that question, I would say who would respond to the call? Right. And if you've been called to do it and you're refusing to do it,
mm.
you're functioning in active disobedience. Right. Yeah, that's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Who would do it? I mean, you have to be called. You have to kind of be anointed. Right. There has to be a grace about you.
Mm.
That would allow you to step into any of these helping roles, right? Or seeing the need, right? And I believe that when we see the need, if we have been exposed to seeing the need, then I have to help in some type of way. It may not even be fostering,
mm-hmm.
right? It may not even be fostering, but seeing the need of foster care, is there a way for you to get in the river?
Right.
Is there a way for you to stand on the side of the river? And I say yes, because we just talked about how you've spoken to some kids who said, anyone that was in my life that was helping me was paid to be there. Well, what happens if you step in and you aren't paid to be there? What happens if you see foster families in your church and you step in and become an auntie without being paid to be there? What would it hurt to take a kid to the movies every now and then?
Mm.
What would it hurt to take a kid to the park every now and then? What would it hurt to engage with the kid and let them know that I actually care and I'm not paid to care? What would it hurt to, not even just kids, but to let people know, like, I see you? Right. Even as a foster parent, I don't do it for the gold stars. I really don't. I genuinely love and adore my community. Right. Lynchburg. Like, and you'll see it if you ever hang out with me for a day. If I ever walk in Walmart or the mall or something, there's somebody, Moss, you're going to hear it. Right. Mm-hmm. You'll see it. I genuinely love my community and I want to do whatever it takes to mend the future of my community. So I'll step in wherever there's a need and wherever I feel called to step in. And so the challenge is not so much to try to do what I do, but to just kind of be something or someone for someone else.
Hmm.
How can we do that?
I would love to know how your kids, your biological kids have, or how you've coached them through, you know, having foster kids in the home and
oh.
how they respond to it.
Oh, it ups and downs doesn't
do it justice.
Yeah, it doesn't do it justice because fostering kids requires that you love them, but at times you have to love them differently. And when we, at times when you think of love, you think of love being equal across the board. If you, you know, you love everyone. But the truth of the matter is you have to love people differently. You talked about your love language. So if I'm not capable of loving you the way you need to be loved, mm-hmm. then I may be in the way. Right? And that's something that we have to understand, right? And you have to grasp, have to make sure I'm loving people the way that they need to be loved.
Fair is not always equal.
Fair is not always equal. So that was something that I had to work through with my kids, because where I'm dad with them and how I raised them, right? These kids call me dad, but I love them a little bit different, right? There's grace that they receive that my biological kids didn't receive. Mm-hmm. And so there was some terrain that we had to work through that was very uneven. And we stumbled a lot. We fell a lot. And we had to help one another up a lot. Now it's, you know, it's kind of the norm. Other than with my 15-year-old, we're still kind of working through it.
So you're raising biological children while fostering.
While fostering, yes.
And a lot of couples don't do that.
Right.
I mean, a lot do, but...
Right.
You know, a lot of people might choose to foster after their biological children have left the nest.
Yes.
So you're parallel parenting.
Yes.
I also know situations where one parent feels the call to foster as they have biological kids, but the other parent is so worried about that, what that will do to the family unit. So I really ask that question for those people.
Right.
Just to have, you know, a real example.
It's a fair question. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a fair question. And it should come with conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hard conversations, especially with the dynamic of one feeling called and the other very hesitant.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've seen where it destroys families.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did it not destroy yours?
Oh, my gosh. Christ.
Mm.
Yeah. If it wasn't for, I don't know. Yeah, if it wasn't for Christ and patience, whew, I don't know. Because there were periods where we paused. We stopped. We said, wait, let's take a step back. There were years where we said, hey, let's take a step back. Let's gather who we are and reestablish who we are and why we're doing what we're doing.
Fill
and making
tank.
Sure that my kids are healthy, right? And yeah, fill up the tank and make sure we are doing it for the same reasons and for the right reasons, definitely.
It's mission work.
It is. It is. It really is. It really is. Because, it's just like mission work, going to another country where the culture is different, right? And you have to understand that culture in order to relate and to be able to minister effectively, right? My home is a kingdom, right? And when you have someone visiting from a different kingdom, there are different cultures, and we have to understand that culture and be able to navigate that so that we can minister effectively.
Thank you.
What more can we say?
Yes.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
I enjoyed
Truly.
This.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, recorded at the corporate offices of 518 Family Services in Lynchburg, Virginia. The hosts of this podcast are Taylor Melvin and Allison Jordan, produced by Liam Chafin, Soli Jugar, Sue England, Taylor Melvin and Allison Jordan, and the executive producers are Robert Day and Claudia Fletcher.